Last week, what we did for how many of you in this room, I asked this last week, but I just want to know, already have some background in knowing something about the chakras? Okay, so at least many of you, good. Last week, we did what turned out to be a really rather succinct but complete little talk about what the chakras are and why they're important. So I urge those of you who either weren't here, even no matter what you know about the chakras, it kind of set the stage for how we're looking at them in this class. So I think it's a good thing to listen to that talk. And for those of you who do know something, again, I've sat in on a lot of classes on chakras myself and have taught a lot of them. And it just happened to work in terms of getting us to this moment to be able to actually start speaking about the chakras. You may remember I sort of squeezed in a little bit about the first chakra at the end, but in a very unusual way, went through the whole first class without touching it. The other thing that's going to be a little unusual about this class is that typically we've done this, just so you know, as an 8-week series, 3 hours a week. And this year, for a lot of reasons, we decided to do it in 4 weeks and for an hour and a half instead of 3 hours. So it's a little different. And because of that, what I would like to do tonight, after just a few sentences of introduction to get us all back onto the same page about why this matters and how we got down to the first chakra to begin with, is I'm going to just go through all of the chakras tonight. And we're just going to talk about 1 through 6, really. And we're going to talk about what do they look like when they're open. Remember I said you could imagine, just to give us a way to hold this as a lotus petal opening at each of these chakras that you can see down here. I'm sorry, this is a little low, and I'm not going to stop to go get a stand for it, but I knew it wanted to be down here. Maybe now it won't even do that. Anyway, I'll have to pick it. I don't want to play with it too long. I had it the first time. I should have left it. To really ask ourselves, why are we even talking about the chakras? Why do they matter? And then ultimately, by the fourth class, to come, the fourth class will be, what are some of the ways that you can look at the different aspects of the chakras and use them in your everyday life? Everyday life means in terms of your growing, unfolding, maturing spiritually, emotionally, even physically. How can you use these chakras really as healing techniques, but not healing in the way we usually think of it, because we usually use that to think about the body. I would say more in terms of wellness, because wellness is much more an attitude, a state of mind. It's something we develop that is so beyond the physical body. So people can have a lot of physical problems and still be well. I remember when I was still doing much more medicine, and I think I mentioned last week that a lot of my work in some period of my professional life was with addicts and alcoholics. I just worked in that field a lot. Thank you very much, Lena. And this is in the early days of AIDS, before we really knew what it was or where it was coming from. Many of these people who I had treated and they had relapsed and whatever, IV drug users, when they realized they were dying, they would come to me and ask me if I could help them in the last weeks or months of their life. Really, they didn't use these words, but what they were saying is to be well. They wanted to die in a better place than where they were. And it was actually, I mean, although there was a huge amount of sadness around it, as you can imagine, so many young people dying. But there was a very beautiful aspect to that, because in those last moments of their life, something inside of them said, this is much more about the state of my soul than it is the state of my body. They knew that. And it was a, you know, it's interesting, there's so much of that now. I mean, there got to be a lot of places where people with AIDS could go and they would get very good spiritual care towards the end of their life. But it wasn't like that when the disease first broke. There was a huge stigma around it. There was a lot around it. Never mind the stigma around chemical dependency and drug addiction. So it was quite a special little place. But it was like this, what I'm talking about, that what we're talking about is we're talking much more about the soul's journey here than we are actually talking about the body, though we will talk about the body and say, how might you use these if you're having particular problems? If you're somebody who's had digestive issues all your life and nobody in the medical profession can help you, this is when we say, let's have you see somebody who practices energetic medicine. And energetic medicine can mean healers, it can mean people who do flower essences, it can mean naturopaths. I mean, all these different people who really work by helping you affect energy flow, as opposed to trying to fix your body from the outside in, which is very often what we in medicine do. And forgive me a little bit, I've given so many talks in the last week, just one of those unusual weeks. I don't remember what I said here and what I said in any other lecture or Sunday sermon or down at East West. So if I repeat myself, it's fine. But I want to say, because I talk a lot about my medicine, it's been such a big part of my life and what I can bring to these teachings. I love medicine. It's been a privilege. It's a wonderful profession. It saves thousands and tens of thousands of lives every day. So there's nothing wrong with Western medicine. It just happens to be great at what it's great at and not necessarily great at everything, which is what it thinks. So we really do tend to fix the problem out here, and we're not very often working on the source of the problem. So if you happen to have appendicitis, you should be thrilled about that. If you have a bad pneumonia, that's really good. If you have a cancer that really needs to be surgically excised, beautiful. But it doesn't mean that we still shouldn't be trying to help people align their energy and help energy flow, which is also going to aid not only in the healing after a surgery, let's say, or to help you tolerate chemotherapy much better, because energetic medicine will, but it can also help you actually begin to heal by helping energy flow. And this is what we're going to look at much more than we can do tonight. I mentioned this book to you last week. $20 we're selling it for. We just get them and sell them for whatever we get them for. But Savitri has written the most amazing, this is called the Chakras Workbook. And it's just filled with every single chakra, everything that's related to it, the color, the sound, the mineral, the taste in your mouth, everything that relates to every chakra, so that you could say to yourself, you know, depending on where a cancer is, or if you're having heart disease or high blood pressure, or you're somebody who's never been able to learn to just speak what's on your mind in a way that you're really shut down and holding on like this, that's not good for us. So how do we help ourselves learn to let energy flow? And it's not always by going through the mind. It can be something as simple, if you will, and I mentioned this last week, as sitting in a room with a certain color light pouring in, or what kind of music do we listen to, and what does that mean? What particular note of music might we play? What chants are good for us to do? What mantras? Which affirmations of all of the affirmations that we have, affirmation statement of our own highest potential? So, for instance, and these are important, and I'll refer to them as I go through the chakras, but one of the affirmations for the third chakra, and we'll talk about what that is, but it's really where the spiritual quality of power rests. And when we want to develop spiritual power and willpower, and again, I'll come back. So there's an affirmation that Swami Kriyananda wrote that says, within me lies the energy to accomplish all that I will to do. Behind my every act is God's infinite power. Now you listen to that. Within me lies the energy to accomplish all that I will to do. What an amazing statement. Very different than, God, I hope I can find the energy. I don't know, what do you think I ought to do to help myself? You can feel there's much less power in those. They have much less ability to move mountains in our world, as opposed to saying, it's on my refrigerator. It was, until I gave it away to a friend, just not that many months ago, but I gave it to somebody who I thought needed it after I've been walking around with it for 20 years at least, maybe 25, that little card. Within me lies the energy to accomplish all that I will to do. I have said that to myself many times every day, all of my life for decades. So, you know, after a while, you have the energy to accomplish all that you will to do. It changes, literally changes, not just energy flows, it changes brain chemistry. It literally changes the formation of neurons in your brain and their ability to reach out for help. We know these things now. It's called neuroplasticity. This is science. This isn't only what these great saints have been telling us for thousands of years. Science is proving it now. Are you all with me? This is so important. We're finding this out about meditation, but it's true about affirmations. And they can actually study it with functional MRIs and EEGs and watch brains change. So can you imagine if you were feeling weak and scared and a little incompetent in places, and maybe you're somebody who's never really been able to find success? I had somebody come and see me a few months ago who was taking Raja Yoga, and he said, I fail at everything. All my life, I failed at everything. I start strong, and then I lose it. I get fired from jobs. Very bright, competent man. And I could say to him, let's start simple. You're going to think, I said to him, you're going to think I've lost my mind, but I promise you, I haven't. This is finding your mind. Here's three affirmations. I want you to go home and I want you to start saying them as many times a day as you can. Because obviously, he's a man in his 40s. He's been trying to get better all his life. Nothing's working. The psychology of it isn't working. But as soon as we start changing the way energy flows here, our lives start changing. I was just meeting with a woman today who said to me, I used to be anxious. I used to be overly reactive in the world. I mean, she'd tell me all these things. Now I've been meditating for less than a year and everything's changing. What is that? You know, I hear that dozens of times a week. What is that? And it's more simple than we know. It's just, unfortunately, that saying that says, I think this was Jack Kornfield who said this first, or Joseph Goldstein, one of those Buddhist, wonderful Buddhist men, who one day when I was in a conference with them years ago, somebody asked them a question. I don't remember what the question was. They said, oh, the answer to that is so simple. It's just not easy. And there's such a difference. The answers are always simple, not always easy to implement these changes in our life. Why is that? Because we're so hooked on being the way we are. As much as we think we want to change, you know, when you really get down to it and you say to people, you really want to just do a little bit of what it would take to be different, yeah, there's something so comforting in staying the same. It's an interesting truth about the human condition. But anyway, okay, so last week we talked about the causal, the astral, and then the material world. We talked about energy existing as pure energy, infinite consciousness, God, call it what you want, who had a thought, then who put some energy behind it, and with that energy materialized the physical world. And in the physical world, it's more than the physical world. It's our thoughts, it's our feelings, It's everything we know to be true about human nature, and more than that, animals and animal nature, insects. Remember I said to you, minerals, rocks, everything. The whole material world that manifested, all manifested from this one huge essence, being, existence of superconsciousness. And as it manifests, and I said to you, sperm and the ovum unite, flash goes up, there's a jiva, remember I used that word, individual soul, who recognizes that flash as its magnetic counterpart. If I go in through those beings, I will be able to work on my karma. I'm drawn there. That's what happens. Magnetism. Energy is always magnetic. This is a purely energetic astral world thing. It recognizes this magnetic draw. It grabs, it slides into it. Medullis form first, spinal cord, brain, nervous system, right? Okay. As the spinal cord is formed, what happens? The energy starts coming down, and I said to you, it goes from ether, then it kind of vibrates at a little bit of a coarser frequency. It's all energy. The same exact substrate makes everything. The wood in the chair that you're sitting on, your flesh, the trees outside, the rocks, it's all the same, vibrating at different frequencies, so it looks different. If you set a fan twirling as fast as it can, you think you're looking at one blade. It looks like one blade. You slow it down a little bit, you think you're looking at two or three blades. You slow it down more, you think you're looking at four or six, right? And to your vision, they're all true. But the number of blades never changed. Nothing really changed except our perception. That's the way energy is. So we go from super ether, actually, to ether. Yeah, here's ether. To air, to fire, to water, to earth. Okay? And when we get the energy all the way down at our lowest chakras, it's vibrating at its grossest. Gross doesn't mean horrible. It means largest, most visible, most solid, and solid's a good way to think of it, manifestation. That's literally what happens. Our whole purpose for being born, for having a life, why would we come in and suffer the way we do, in a way, is to really find our way back up here, all the way back up to this ether or ethereal state. That's where we're headed, even before we know it. I'm sure there are many of you in this room who've never thought that. You've never thought, oh, I know exactly what the sole purpose of my life is. I'm trying to get back to ether. We don't think like that. But it's the truth. It doesn't make it less true because you haven't known it. And I said to you last week, and Swami Kriyananda wrote, the beginning of the Raja Yoga book, he says this is going to take a complete revolution of thought. You're going to have to decide to think about things very differently than you've thought about them before. Life is not what it seems. Nothing is what it seems. And your mind is there trying desperately to hold on to you, to say, don't listen to a word she's saying. She's trying to tell you something. Look, she can't even prove it. I know what's right. What's right is what you think, what you want. Happiness really does lie outside. You need to accomplish a lot in the world. You need to get a lot, make a lot, find all exactly the right things. Just try a little harder and you'll be happy. Oops, didn't work that time. A little harder. You need a little more. You need just a little different person. It goes on all the time. Just think about your life, not while you're trying to listen to me, but later. How many times have we just reached out thinking, this will make me happy, this will make me happy. Gee, that would thrill me. No. Okay? It's just simply not the truth. Furthermore, you can't rely on any of it, ever. It can all be whisked away in a moment. What you are inside, what you carry from the inside out, your beliefs, your commitments, where your devotion is, what it is you're seeking, ultimately, the complete realization that you are a part of something so much bigger, so much more beautiful, so much more calm, more peaceful, more embracing, more perfectly in love than anything or anyone that's out here. No matter how perfect you think your human relationship is, it doesn't matter. Everything can be gone in a moment. Who we are inside, in this astral spine, nobody can ever take it from us. So when we get to the place, so we draw energy, we do this, this is how we meditate. This is how we learn to meditate. Draw energy up, up the left side of our body, what's called the irda. It's not marked on here, but that's what this is, and down the pingala, up and down. We get energy flowing like that. Ultimately, the goal is to keep drawing it in more and more and more, to be just like this, to feel just like this from the inside out. Then you're inside of these lines, which is called the sushumna, and that's where we're aiming. A couple of mornings ago, I took a walk with a friend. She just moved to Menlo Park. So she said, oh, let's just walk around Menlo Park. Let me get to know my new home and stomping grounds. And she took me down to St. Raymond's Church on Santa Cruz Avenue, which I've driven by probably a half a million times in my life at least. And we walked back into their flower garden, which is utterly exquisite. Please go there if you haven't. But there is a statue of Mary in there that is so compelling. I looked at her and it instantly brought me to tears. I mean, just tears started streaming. And when I could, I was going to say collect myself, but that was collected. But when I got back out of that beautiful place, unfortunately, and I looked at her and I tried to say to myself, what is it about her? Because I wanted to talk to, about her in my service this coming Sunday. I knew that right away. And I thought, what words am I going to put to that? She is, whoever the artist has called it, Immaculate Conception. But she's not pregnant. But she has conceived the Lord. You can see it. Every bit of her energy, whoever that artist is, has her drawn so magnificently inside and in a state of perfect bliss. It's really amazing. And she's on top of, done on top of the snake with, it has an apple in its mouth. So it's really like she's conquered and freed Kundalini. It's very beautifully done. That's what it means. That's what happens in here in the Sushumna. Very hard to put into words because it's beyond words and it's beyond mind. But we still have to communicate somehow, most of us. In about 20,000 years, 25,000 years, we won't have to. We'll just have a thought and we'll all know it and it'll be beautiful. And all thoughts will be uplifting. But we're not in Satya Yuga yet. We're only in ascending to Apar Yuga, which interestingly is the age of energy. That's what I told you last week, I think. I hope I said it here. I can't remember if I talked about Dwapara and energy in this class. Did I? No, I didn't. Okay. Forgive me that I just gave a talk at East West at the store on Raja Yoga, the art and science of Raja Yoga. And so they kind of dovetail like that. But we are in what is called the age of energy. And if you just think of these huge cycles of time, I don't have even a minute to talk about it, but they're very real. They repeat and repeat and repeat, but each part goes somewhere between 6,000 years and 24,000 years, I think it is, depending on the age. So we've just come all the way down, the circle is actually this way, all the way down like this, through the dark ages over here, through the time when Jesus was born and everything was very solid and material and rule-oriented. That's who the Jews were when Jesus came, which is why he came. They had 600 and some laws they had to practice every day. It was complicated to be a good Jew in those days, but they were trying. They were good people, but living in the dark. And, of course, we all know about the dark ages, and all of that was happening. Then we came up through a period of time called ascending, which means we are headed back to the light. And Kali Yuga first, now we're in the next stage called Dwapara Yuga, which started about 1700 or so, but we're at the very beginning. But so we have a long way to go till things feel much lighter. As I'm sure we all know, things are not feeling exactly light in the world yet, but they will. And it's the age of energy. That's its name. And look at what's happened. I mean, look what's gone on, even in all of our lifetimes, as I look around, everybody in this room, just about. So much has happened at this in this time. I mean, even since 1900, you know, that's had to do with energy and our discovery about energy and making things and cars and airplanes and computer games, and you can just go on and on. You know, in the late 1800s, very late 1800s, there was a man who was the head of the patent office, and he said to the president at the time, and I don't remember who the president was in the late 1890s, but he said to him, seriously, we should just close the patent office. There's nothing else to be discovered, he said. Everything's already been discovered that could be discovered. This is in the late 1800s. That's what he thought. And look at what's happened since then. It's nothing short of a miracle. I mean, really, within a very few short years now, you know, every single thing we want is going to be dropped at our front door by a drone, and cars are going to be driving themselves. And I mean, soon there won't even be cars, you know, really, when you think about what's going on. So for somebody like me, who's 70, it's been incredible in this life what's happened. Just incredible. I mean, to be around when the first television came out, I mean, I don't remember that exactly, but it was closed. These things are amazing, and refrigerators, and so much has happened. So this is what's going on. I mean, energy is shifting and changing, just that most people don't realize it outside of the material world. Remember I told you last week about Curlian photography, the energy comes first. The material world is made manifest after that. So that means that all of these things could only be invented because energy is changing. Yes. These are whirlpools or vortices of energy. So the image that's a very good image that's always used is that as, remember I told you that this astral spine has been living in some other loka, some other place for we don't know how many years. Maybe some of us lived 5 years before we were born again. We just died. Maybe it's been 5,000 years. We don't really know. It varies lifetime to lifetime. But as it comes in and as it forms who you are, it informs and then forms. Because we're not pure and clean and just in that central spine, there's ways that we're stuck in different places. Chakra means wheel. And so there are little wheels of energy. And if you think of a stream that's got these little whirlpools of energy at the side where twigs get stuck and rocks get stuck and pieces of glass and sometimes poor little animals, if you either take, you open a dam behind that and you let much more water flow, or you have somebody go in and really literally pull out the debris so you can remove the impedance to the flow or you can increase the flow, all of that stuff that's out there gets swept into the stream and starts flowing with it. That's what happens with our karma, our seeds of karma that are stuck in these chakras. As we meditate or as we do techniques to get energy flowing, we start dragging all that up. Again, it's happening energetically, but we're always drawing energy up to this, which is the positive pole of the sixth chakra. The body is a manifestation of the energy that we are. We come in with an energetic pattern. You'd have to look at some pictures to see this. I'm really sorry that Connie Hernandez is not going to be able to lecture to you. She does a beautiful slideshow of this where they've learned how to take pictures of water in its energetic form. It's never been done until not that many years ago. So if you look at water that's been contaminated with radiation, the picture is so ugly you can hardly look at it. You have people come in and you have them pray over that water, and it turns itself into a magnificent hexagonal or some type of a beautiful mandala type image, because you've changed its energy. Energy is the substrate from which everything is made. I don't want to spend a huge amount more time here right now, and I don't know how else. It would be like you saying to me, but how does how do we get from the waterfall to electricity? What do you mean? It's a waterfall over there and it's running my iron at home. You know, that would make no sense to you, except you've been taught it over the years. So you understand that they can turn the force of that waterfall into electricity, run that electricity through cables and whatnot, and then you go home and you have a hairdryer, or you turn your stove on. And it has to do with something that's happening God only knows where. Same thing here. There's an energy source. That source happens to be the divine, but we can call it the divine waterfall if that makes everybody feel better. But there is an infinite source of energy that winds up working its way through this miasma of time and space, and it winds up looking like us. And it just, and we all look different because we're all different manifestations of that energy. But if we draw ourselves back in and we start neutralizing energy in each of these chakras, neutralizing is not, it's a misnomer in a way, but it just means if we start finding ways to let the energy flow more freely, which is really what meditation is, and there is no way to ultimately get here without meditation. We can work on it with color, with sound, with vibration, with wearing the correct, I don't have one, not a bangle, but people wear bracelets with different big stones in them that have been, somebody who can read such things has said, you need a 2-carat sapphire, you need a 2-carat ruby, you need, because these stones are energy too, because they're going to help align and open your chakras. It's very hard for the mind to get this. It's not hard if you start a practice of meditation, because you begin to experience things that you could not have explained before. And I'm sorry, I know that takes a leap of faith, but you can test it out yourself. You can go into a bar that's playing acid rock music and see how you feel. And then you can come in here on a Friday night when there's chanting going on, or a Sunday service when this very, very uplifted music is happening, and say to yourself, what is that? You know, I don't think I said it here, but you know, my husband and I have two separate homes. We've been together 35 years. We've always had two separate homes, which is why we've been together 35 years. And it's not him, it's who I am, and I need space, and we're just different. And it never dawned on me that I'd be able to live that close with anybody. I just never thought that way. And he loves sounds. I mean, you turn his computer's on, no matter what function is happening. You know, when you hear the something going into the trash in his computer, it's like, bing, bang, clank, boom, psh, you know. That's like to throw one thing into the trash. It's just, you know, every time an email comes in, and it makes me crazy. And in his cars, he has alarms and buzzers if you go over the speed limit, or a radar detector. And I mean, it's just, I can't live like that. You know, it literally begins to make me feel like I'm going crazy. It doesn't touch him at all. But you begin to realize, if you've worked at calming your energy, at decreasing the swing of the pendulum that takes us out here and then over here, because as Swami Kriyananda says, in the end, everything in our life has to equal zero. Every time we're really happy, probably something's going to happen to make us really sad. Every success, there's a failure over the course of lifetimes, because we just have to come back to center and being ourselves. So I've been meditating for 30-some years in this life. I'm sure many years before that. And I live a little closer to my center than my beloved husband does. And so he doesn't notice those sounds. He's like, what's bothering you? And I mean, I feel like I'm going to go home for a couple days, and I go back to my house in the community, you know, and I live in the peace and quiet with Swami Kriyananda chanting Om in the background, very quietly, where there's no television, no radio, you know, simple. Everything in my home is something that has spiritual significance, and there's not a lot in my home. It's just, to me, that feels calm. To some people, they come in, it's like, where is the noise? Where's the mess? Where's the... They need that, you know? So, I don't know if that helps you at all, but that's energy. That's just what it is, so we can talk more later. Okay. So, we are... The way we are made is we come in, I told you last week, we immediately form the medulla. We're already turning our back on the source of our energy. We're already heading out into this world. 9 months later, we come out, we're a full-blown infant. Everything we need to get from the outside in. We need food, we need shelter, we need everything. We learn very quickly what we need and want is out into the world. And if we weren't learning it quickly enough, everybody teaches us that. They begin to teach us, look at these pretty little things, little balls that I'm going to drop in front of you, and look how pretty the color is. And, oh, yeah, honey, go ahead. Oh, look, he's reaching for them. You get a hold of the rattle, and you shake it, and you love that sound. Everything's outside of you. And it just grows, and it grows, and it grows. And we're inundated, and we're conditioned. And that's how it happens. We have billboards. We have televisions. We have advertisements. And those people are brilliant. These people know exactly how to make us believe. You look at some of these advertisements, sometimes you cannot even figure out what are they selling. Sometimes I look at a billboard, I think to myself, what is it about? I can't get it. Not even just because I'm driving at 65 miles an hour. Even if I stopped, what am I supposed to want because that incredibly gorgeous man is sitting up there without a shirt on? What? And it'll have to do with, like, you know, airlines I'm supposed to fly or a computer I want. Who would even know? But they get you subliminally. They're good at it. They're paid a lot to do that, and they do it well. And before we know it, we're living here, and we're thinking everything I want is out there. Now, it's not just here. It's here and here and here and here. Because what we're going to go over right now are the chakras. And remember, now we're here. We are on a journey back up the spine. Our whole purpose is to take ourselves from an ego-centered consciousness. I, me, I need, I want, I'm happy if, I like, I don't like, to a soul-centered consciousness. I'm part of an infinite reality, and everything is perfect just exactly as it is. It's a very different consciousness, and it's just a few inches away, but it's all the difference in the world, okay? So I said this to you last week. The first chakra is called the root chakra. And remember I said to you, no such thing as a good or bad chakra. We need them all. The whole spiritual path is about direction. I can't say it enough. This is what I'm going to tell you. In this root chakra, which I talked about last week, the beneficial attributes of the root chakra are the sense of being solid, of being secure, of having a sense of loyalty, of being able to be steadfast, committed, you know, firm, reliable. Everything that you can think in a positive way of somebody you know who you could count on, who you could trust, and who's a solid person. They don't get blown away by everything that happens in life. It's called the root chakra. I said this because we've laid down roots when we do that. So that's the first chakra at its best, the first chakra is related to that part of Patanjali's teachings called the yamas, I believe. Yamas or niyamas, excuse me, I just confused myself, but I want to tell you the truth, not that it would really matter right now. Yamas? The yamas are the don'ts on the spiritual path. It's like non-lying, non-stealing, non-greediness. It's a weird way of putting it, but basically it says, if you don't do these things, your natural, true nature will be exposed, and your true nature is one that would never lie. And it's not just lying, like tell a lie, or non-stealing. Most of us wouldn't steal. But if we gossip and we make it harder for somebody to have a good experience in the office because we're over here gossiping about them, you know, that's stealing. Patanjali says that's stealing their ability to feel at peace and at ease. I certainly cannot go through all the yamas and niyamas, but I want you to see that getting rooted, getting settled, getting strong is also related to one of the first steps on anybody's spiritual path, which Patanjali called the yamas and then the niyamas, the don'ts and do's of a spiritual path. Doesn't matter what path or what religion. If anybody's going to make it to a place of being spiritually free, united in super consciousness again, they have to be abiding by those laws. They have to be, or the soul cannot be free. You cannot be over here telling lie after lie after lie and then be a free soul. Doesn't happen. It hurts you. It certainly hurts everybody else, but it hurts and everything else, which is why Mahatma Gandhi with nonviolence, he made it a very literal thing. But of course, Gandhi knew what Patanjali really meant. He meant don't even have a violent thought about somebody. It's about attitude more than it is about behavior. Anyway, whole other lecture, but so just for somebody to be solid and rooted, and you know what that is. Now, what happens if they're misdirected? And misdirected on the spiritual path, it's very simple. Everything that's going to take us back to our true nature, to a soulful existence, to feeling exactly what it is we all want to feel and know. More happiness, less pain. More peace, more calm, less tumult. You understand? Anything is our things that draw our energy inward and up. In and up is the good direction here. When I was a little girl, I used to always tell my mother, this is the weirdest thing, where this came from. I never want to go south or east. That's what I used to tell her. I only like north and west. And it's really, it's true. I love the Northwest. I came here in my 20s. I was born and raised in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. But I never went back. I never thought about going back. But as a very little girl, I used to say, I don't like those ways, Mommy. I don't like to go south or east. Everybody would look at me. I was like 4, you know? So it's like that. On the spiritual path, whatever it is that's going to bring us to be able to know whatever that is Mary's experiencing. In that statue, it's always drawing energy in and bringing it up. It's not trying to get out of the world necessarily. It's learning what to do with the energy. Because we all have to work. We all need to provide for ourselves. We're human beings. We have the human condition to live with, which means interacting with other people. It means accomplishing things in the world. It means all of that. But how can we do that in a way? Yogananda used to say, the whole goal in the spiritual life is to be calmly active and actively calm. And actually, that's very much related to the fifth chakra, where the main quality of the fifth chakra is attaining calmness. But he would say that. And if you think about that, it's absolutely brilliant. In 4 words, calmly active, do everything you need to do. Don't let it interrupt your sense of inner peace or calmness. And be actively calm means seeking calmness. And it's just perfect. So Sister Gyanamata, who was Yogananda's foremost female disciple, very, very highly evolved woman, used to say, I always tell Master, it's what she called Yogananda, change not the circumstances of my life, change me. Meaning, things are never going to be in the world so that it fits us perfectly. We need to learn how to be in the world and be solid, steadfast, centered, calm, no matter what's going on out there. So it's our job to change what's in here. in and up, and what it means when it's talking about misdirected manifestations of any chakra. It means energies being pulled down and out. And in the first chakra, what happens? People get too rigid. So the saying of the first chakra is be firmly rooted, be solid, and be willing to change in a moment's notice. And those people who can't, who hate change, you know, there are people who just hate change. I don't know how many of you remember the Marx Brothers, but they had a song that they used to sing, whatever it is, I'm against it. You know, they were very funny, but it was like, no change, I'm going to be against it. You know, they were of course saying great truths, but in their own humorful way. So people who are too rigid, too disciplined, they can't ever just get soft and go with the flow. And, you know, somebody who might, I mean, it's absurd, but little things that people do, they get nearly obsessional about things. And so I ran into a woman in our parking lot the other day, and it seems to be my job. I keep saying to people, did you happen to not see the 5 or 6 or 7 signs that you passed on your way in that says private parking? I mean, I say it at least 5 times a day. I'm just here for 5 minutes. I say, you know, that's what everybody says. There's a lot of people. This is our parking lot. And this woman says, but I have a baby. I would have to take him out the other side of the car. I said, honey, if you just make a U-turn and park over there, you could take him on the same side of the car. I mean, it's like, no, but I always take my son out of this side of the car. It's just absurd how hooked we all get on. It's a silly example, but it's not in a way, because we get very regimented and we can't change anything. So people can't take a little vacation because they have routines that they do at home and they can't get out of it. Or, you know, we're just wed to our routines and to being regimented. And this is, you know, you find people, they just feel heavy, they feel dense. Do you know what I'm describing? These are people who are just stuck, and they have a feeling of being stuck. And it can actually be very harmful when people get too rigid and too disciplined, and they act out in families and work. And, you know, it can, I would say a lot of the abuse comes more from the third chakra, but it can start with a lot of these qualities in the first chakra. More than anything, it doesn't allow us to be expansive. It's completely and totally the other energy. It's down, it's firm, it's solid, it's here. It's not moving. And that's just not the way life goes. So those are the qualities of the first chakra. You can't move on and grow into being a healthy individual in any way if you don't have a pretty strong sense of yourself. You know, even when people begin on a spiritual path, not infrequently I find that they're coming onto a spiritual path to avoid doing some of the psychological or emotional work they need to do to get healthy and be well. And they think that by coming and trying to learn to meditate or coming to Sunday services, that they don't have to pay attention to all of the ways that they're feeling utterly miserable, that this will fix it. And it's not true. And I often say to people, you need to have a very strong, clear, centered ego before you can begin to let go of it. So we need to, in our first chakra, really be solid. And remember I talked about loyalty, and I think I said to you last week, Yogananda said that loyalty is one of the most important things on the spiritual path. But we need to know what we're loyal to. And what we're loyal to, we want to be something uplifting and expansive. We are talking here in this class about growing spiritually. We're not talking about all the things in the material world. Should we be loyal to our partners, to our family, to our work? Absolutely. But even there, for all the right reasons, because we want to live dharmically. We want to live in the right way. Dharma means right action. It means behaving in such a way that if you do that, no undue harm could ever come to another creature. That's what dharma means. Doesn't mean that people won't get hurt, because you know, as we'll talk about with the third chakra, there's righteous wars that go on. But they're righteous wars. There are times where, you know, if a gunman came into this building right now and started shooting all of you, and I had the ability to kill him, would that be dharmic or adharmic? I mean, of course, it would be a dharmic thing for me to do. It would be a higher consciousness kind of thing to stop the killing of many by because somebody's become psychotic, which is really how else could people kill. But anyway, so it's not the act necessarily or the end result. It's always the consciousness. So what we're trying to do is raise our consciousness. That's a presumption about you having walked in here. So we're talking about being loyal, really, in essence, to our path to find truth. That's what we're talking about. And anything that we need to do to get us there, that's what we'll do. Okay? First chakra. Second chakra. The element is water. It means being fluid. The qualities of it are creativity, fluidity, flexibility. A lot of our sexuality and sensuality comes from the second chakra. But you can see the form is beginning to soften. It still has form. You can take a glass of water, and it's water. And if I'm not going to, but if I poured it out onto the rug, it would still be water. It would be in the rug. It still maintains its form. It can change form. We know this when we see things go from water to steam or water to ice or even crystals. That's the word I was trying to think about before, about photographing water in its crystalline form, which until not that long ago, we didn't even know it existed in. Now we do. So it's got a form, but obviously it's different than wood or concrete or anything where the form cannot be changed. With water, the form can be changed. So it's fluid, it's free-flowing. It's, again, as I said, it's flexibility. What happens if it's too much in that direction? People wind up being all over the place, kind of wishy-washy. They can never really make decisions. I mean, you meet people who are very indecisive in life, or people who wind up getting 4, 5, or 6 degrees, you know, never really being able to find themselves and settle on what it is they want, where they need to go. Now, you don't want to be fluid if you don't have a solid base. So I want you to begin to see how these chakras are really interdependent. And they're not linear. You don't like fix the first chakra and when that's all fixed, you go into the second or another. We'd never get anywhere because probably most of us do not have our first chakra perfectly aligned. So we're working on all of them or intermittently on one at a time, or, you know, somebody might feel inspired at some point to just start doing a lot of chanting. And they may not even know why, but maybe they just feel like their heart needs to open in a way. But it doesn't mean that maybe they're still pretty stubborn in other ways too. So their first chakra is still holding them in a bad place. But why does it work that way? It works that way because of the analogy I was giving with the flow of water. And it's part of why we always talk about keeping our awareness as much as possible at the point between the eyebrows. Because as long as we're drawing energy up, as long as we're helping the energy go there, even without as much effort as it might take, we begin to find the other chakras opening. It's like going at the bottom of that stream that's leading to the ocean, or the river. If there's a big block there, let's say 4 beavers have come in and built a dam, and you release the dam at the bottom of the river, everything that's up here can flow much more smoothly. Everything in that way is down to the ocean. We're just doing the same thing, but we're doing it in an upward direction. As long as we're drawing energy up. So no matter where we are in our life, no matter what's happening, if we start doing more chanting, spiritual music, music that's that with a very high vibration, or that's attuned to any avatar or master, to that energy, we automatically help the lower chakras open. So the chakras are working together. They're not working independently. Other qualities of people who are out of line with their second chakra are, as I said before, not grounded, a little too watery. Just, you know, they don't really have quite enough form at all. People tend to be undependable. I talked about dependability with the first chakra. Undependable if the second chakra is misdirected. It's hard to use the words about it, but until they're open and flowing smoothly. They're not dependable. They're not quite trustworthy because you never quite know where they're going to be. You can't quite find them. You can't trust them to just all of a sudden develop a little tributary and go off in this direction and, you know, to never quite be able to get themselves somewhere on time. Those kinds of things, the kinds of things that make you wonder, gee, can I rely on this person or not? So, again, the other thing it does with the issue of sensuality and sexuality, which is rooted in our second chakra, is it keeps us tied to the idea that pleasure exists outside of ourselves. And if we get a little pleasure, we want more pleasure. And it keeps us recreating outward experiences to try and satisfy ourselves. Now, again, is there something just across the board wrong with sex? Of course not. But sexual addiction, indiscriminate sex over and over. I mean, how many people, I know a lot of people who have issues like that. None of them feel good about themselves because it's not our true nature. It's just not inherently who we are. Whereas if we talk about meeting somebody and falling in love and making love, and it's beautiful. I mean, sort of the same act or acts, but really handled differently. Again, with a little more of a stable person who knows where they are, who's making conscious decisions, who's able to go with the flow and find themselves having a wonderful time one night, but not behaving in ways that are unthought out, unconscious. I gave this analogy last week in my Sunday sermon. Were any of you at service on Sunday? Okay, so a lot of you heard where I said, you walk into, and it just came to me during service, but it was just perfect. You walk into a restaurant and they're playing music, and before you know it, the music gets louder and louder, and you don't think anything of it. You talk louder, you speak over it, and then you say to your friends, let's go out and have a drink. You don't even know where it came from. Sometimes people say, I didn't even feel like going out for a drink, but unbeknownst to them, that music had gotten a hold of them and started affecting them. And they wind up out for a drink, and they wind up having too many drinks, and they wind up behaving in ways that they don't feel good about. I used a sexual image in service, but it doesn't matter. People come to me and say, I'm just so embarrassed. I was loud. I was noisy. I kept interrupting people. I remember that. It was embarrassing how I was. I've heard it so many times. I've been there. Believe me. I mean, you know, we were all once 20s and 30s and 40s and wherever it was when we were still behaving like that unconsciously. And it just always used to feel so terrible to me. That probably saved my life because I wasn't willing to do any drugs that were going to make me lose control. I hated that feeling. But, you know, so we just need to keep these things in tow. So again, sexuality is not bad, but it can either be beautiful or it can be harmful. Fluidity, flexibility, wonderful qualities. But just following along whichever way the gang goes because they're going that way, doing things because somebody else says for you to do them. And remember, just like the advertising, it's not always as gross as how I'm saying it. It's very subtle. This is what happens to teenagers a lot. They don't realize what's going on, but they just have to fit in and go with the gang and off many times wind up doing things that they're not pleased about, their parents aren't pleased about, and many of them are really good kids. It's not like they're bad people doing bad things. What if even is a bad person? There's a lot of good kids out there who get themselves into trouble in many ways. Again, second chakra stuff. But combination of first and second. Anybody have any questions before I move on?
I was just curious, what is Neo?
What is niyama? Yeah, I'm going to not be able to go through all these, but I'll tell you. I mentioned Patanjali. He's considered to be the father of yoga, not just hatha yoga, but the whole science of yoga. I cannot suggest highly enough that anybody in the room who has not taken our Raja Yoga course come and take it. It starts again August 23rd. It is superb. It's a 14-week course that is really wonderful. And we spend actually 2 or 3 weeks talking about Patanjali, but this is the man who intuited and wrote down the entire art and science of yoga. And by that, he meant yoga means union, it means oneness, it means bringing body, mind, and soul together. Then from that center place, remembering that we're all a part of something bigger. So union here and union with all that is. And in order to attain that, he said you have to go through this eightfold path of Patanjali. It's what it's called. The first part of that are the yamas, which are the don'ts of the spiritual path. Don't lie, don't steal, don't be greedy, and more. There's five of them. And there's five niyamas, which are the do's. And the do's are cleanliness and... I'm sorry, I teach it all the time, but I can't pop them up. But there are ways to be... I'm trying to think if brahmachari... I'm getting myself confused right now, and I shouldn't be, but I am. So these are things one would do on the spiritual path. And each of these, every one of our chakras is related to one aspect of Patanjali's Eightfold Path. He's related to, each one is related to one of the Pandava brothers, you know, who in the Gita, I'm going to talk about them in a moment. And it all has to do with the same quality, whether we're talking about it through the niyamas or the do's of the spiritual path, or through... here it talks about Jupiter, sun sign Sagittarius. You know, it just lists, and there's loads of these tables in this book that I'm telling you. But I wanted to just see one thing. I wanted to tell you if it's on here. So the Pandava brothers, the lowest chakra here, Sahadev and Nakula were twins. And so the first two chakras relate to Sahadev and Nakula. And again, they're just all of the same qualities that we could find in a color, in a sound, that relate to the energy that's in these lower chakras. It's very hard to put into just a few words, but ultimately, and it took me years to begin to have this knowing, that whatever we go to study on the spiritual path, the reason they can all be related to the chakras is because it all comes back to being at one. It all comes back to being central, the essence of who we are. I'm sorry these are hard concepts, but what I want to promise you is that this is part of why it's great to take the Raja Yoga course. It's fascinating, actually. It has so much to do with who we are and how to improve our lives. It doesn't have to do with making any commitment to Ananda. It has to do with us and our own spiritual path. Because the more we hear these things, the more we read, the more we look at it from this aspect or this, we get to know so much more about it. I have been teaching that Raja Yoga class for years. I've taught every chapter in it. Never do I stand up to give a talk. And it's not just me, by the way. In fact, I'm actually trying to teach less and less. So this next time I'll give two of the talks, but and other great teachers will give the other talks. But every time I give one of those talks, I think, oh, now I see this, something that I never saw before. This is after decades. You know, decades of true spiritual study. That Raja Yoga book is not decades old, but for as long as it's been around, I've been reading it and teaching it. Because it's not just that these concepts are subtle, it's that we're not. And as we grow spiritually, the more subtle we become, the less hard and fast, physical, in our minds, we begin to absorb this knowledge in different ways. And we can just know things next week that we couldn't have known today. And it's just that way on the spiritual path. It's the beauty of it, because you actually feel yourself making progress. Even in this evolution, it takes millions of lifetimes. Millions. I mean, every great saint has said that. And yet, in this one little lifetime, I can genuinely say, oh my God, I am so different in the last 15 years. I've just changed so much in 15 years. I mean, anybody who knows me would say that. And it's not even a drop in a bucket. It's not even that big. It's like a molecule of water in a huge bucket of water 15 years. But change happens, transformation happens. And we can speed that up or slow it down, depending on how sincere we are, the commitment that we make, the diligence, how much time, effort, energy, and what the it is happiness. It's the sense of joy, of freedom. It's not any weird concept about chakras or yamas or niyamas or who are the Pandava brothers. None of that really matters. You wouldn't have to know any of that. You're here because it's interesting and fascinating, and because God himself probably wanted you to come and sit in this energy for a while. I mean, that's really the truth. That's the only reason we're all here. Because if we were to just sit quietly with each other and learn to meditate and meditate together and never develop a bit of intellectual knowledge, we could still attain freedom faster. Our minds get in the way. You know what I'm saying? So this is fascinating. I love that you're all here and that we can be sharing this. But make no mistake about it. This is transformational, and it's always to the better. Always. It's a guarantee. No matter what's happening in your world, you always feel better. The more you dive into this, the more you just bring yourself into this room where, as I said last week, people have just been calling on God for so many years. Okay. Any other comments or questions, Peggy? I'm not going to talk about it, actually. Sorry. I'm going to be lucky if I get through the six chakras. Yeah. And we won't. Next week, Bhajana is going to be teaching. Bhajana is sort of a global teacher. She just flew in from Italy. She spends months in India every year. Now she's here for a few months. I'll be out of town. She's actually going to do some hatha yoga with you, gentle hatha yoga, and a lot of pranayama, a lot of breathing, and take you through the chakras in this way to let you have an experience of it. And she may get to some of that. I don't know. We'll see. There's just so much we can do in 4 weeks. So we... Yeah, that's the other Savitri. There's two books by Savitri. They're both over there. Chakras for Starters is a little kind of, it sums it all up. But the handbook is really brilliant. It also sums it up, and it answers a lot of questions and can guide you. Even something as much as showing you, oh my God, I have that quality. I really should be wearing more green. Green would be a good color for me. Or, you know, I mean, whatever it is. Remember I said to you last week, I told a patient of mine who had been living with her alcoholic husband in an abusive, not physically but verbally, environment for 20 years when I met her. And she just couldn't speak up. She just couldn't. So I said to her, I want you to start wearing more blue, and I want you to go to East West bookstore and buy the pendant for the throat chakra, and I want you to put it on and not take it off. And within a month, her life started changing. I mean, I could never have gotten her there with therapy. She had seen therapists all her life. But just energetically, we started helping her change. And as soon as you start changing, you change more rapidly. You're opening up these fritties, we call them, these little channels of energy so things can flow. Jody?
That happened to me once. It's a bit of a meditation.
Yeah, this isn't just what's the word I want? Voodoo. You know, this is all real, and you'll feel it. You know, you look at the people who, I happen to like black, it's a good color for me, interestingly. It shouldn't be spiritually, and I never wore it for years. But this is true, but when I let my hair turn white, I had to go back to wearing color. I used to wear all white. But now I just look like I'm going to fade and disappear if I wear. So I don't anymore. So I do wear black. But when you see people who are black on black on black, and black high boots and black jewelry, what do you think or what do you feel? You know, we all know We literally might cross the street if we see somebody like that coming. Or, you know, colors mean something, and the types of jewelry and things that people wear. And, you know, we just change like that. I remember the first year that I ever walked into this church. I mean, there were still pews in it, and it was, we hadn't bought it that long before, and I had been away, whole long story that's not important to you, but living mostly in India with another teacher, I came back to Ananda. I came to my first New Year's Eve service. I just shrink every time I think about this, but I'm sharing it for a reason. And it was New Year's Eve. I was going to go out dancing afterwards and do what I do. And I came in black leather pants and a black sweater. And I remember somebody came up to me, a man that I'd known for years in the professional world, and he said to me, "God, you look great, Shanti." And all of a sudden, it just dawned on me. I mean, I had to leave. I was just so embarrassed. That person telling me I look great, he was not anybody I wanted to look great for. Thought, what am I doing in church in skin-tight black leather pants? And it was just horrible. I mean, all of a sudden, I realized, this is not your energy anymore. You used to do this. It was fine. You can't do this anymore. Not because from the outside in, it didn't look good. It just wasn't right. I would have looked absurd because I felt absurd. You know what I mean? So, I mean, just everything about you, just even after this class tonight, you just start looking at people differently. And it's easy. We can. I was reading myself then, so I'm not making fun of people. But we can read each other. You know, we can just look and think, oh, they look uncomfortable in their skin. Or why is that person squeezing themselves into that clothing? Like, you know, you just get the feeling that you want to just help them be free. Of course, we can never do that. They'll never do that. But you know it inside, you know? Okay, third chakra. We may or may not make it, and we're just going to have to live with that if we don't. The Sanskrit names, the first chakra is called the coccyx area, and the second is the sacral. It's called Muladhara in Sanskrit, again, all in these books. It's all over the internet if you want to look it up. And this is the Swadhisthana, but, you know, just the Sanskrit word for it. So it matters, actually, again, because of the vibration of the Sanskrit language, but we can't go into it yet. You know, we could spend weeks on any one chakra. So this is a chakra teaser, chakra 101, okay? But you're learning a lot of very important things. You know, we're speaking about the essence of it. The third chakra is the lumbar chakra, the Manipurna. The color of it is red. That's the color that's associated with the chakra, just to say that. Because it's red, it's fiery. The whole essence of the third chakra is fiery self-control, power, but not power over somebody. When this chakra is out of balance, it looks like Hitler. It looks exactly like Adolf Hitler. You need to exert power over people. You need to control them. You always know what's right for them. You want your army in a row, right in order. I mean, it really is like Hitler in that way. When it's in you, when it's positive, the Pandava brother who's associated with the third chakra is Arjuna. Arjuna is, as I'm sure many of you know, the being in the Bhagavad Gita, the Hindu Bible, that represents all of us, right? He represents every one of us in our human condition. Very high soul. He actually gets to ride in the chariot in this war that's happening. The Pandavas and the Kauravas, who are cousins, are at war with each other now. The whole story is way too long to tell, but a wonderful, fascinating story. And Arjuna had a choice between all of Krishna's army, thousands of soldiers, to be on his side, or Krishna, who represents God. And he chose Krishna. And he knew, I mean, the statement was, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all else will be added unto you." If he had God on his side, he knew he couldn't lose. But he's called disciple every man. Means all of us. So he's he represents still that part of us that's confused. So what happens in the story, which is beautiful for this chakra, is Krishna's telling him, you have to kill all of your cousins, the Kauravas. Now in India, they have a phrase called cousin brothers, because they are so close as families, really, traditionally. The cousins are much more like what we would call brothers. Arjuna says, I can't kill those, my cousins. I was raised with them. We nursed at the same breast. We played archery together, which was the sport of the day. We learned together. I can't kill them. And he takes his bow and arrow, which signifies the spiritual spine, by the way, part of the bow, and he throws it on the ground. And Krishna, representing the divine, says to him, you must fight. This is a righteous war. He actually uses those words. I mean, that's the way it's written in the Gita. But what he says that's so important to Arjuna is he says, if your willingness to fight this righteous battle, to kill the cousins who represent all of our downward pulling, P-U-L-L, pulling, negative qualities, everything that's about jealousy, being overly competitive, greed, lying, stealing, lack of cleanliness, everything that's represented in the yamas and niyamas, that's what the Kauravas represent. And Arjuna is saying, I can't kill them. Really what he's saying is where we are. I don't want to let go of all of that. Do I have to let go of all of those qualities? Can't I hold on to just a little bit of it and still be a spiritual person? Really, I have to change everything. I have to completely align every chakra. I just can't like run out and get drunk every once in a while. Or, you know, maybe occasionally I need to lie a little bit to make more money to support my family. And Krishna's saying, everything in the future, everything of the universe depends on your killing every one of them. If you don't pick your bow and arrow back up, if you're not willing to fight for what you believe in and know to be true on your path to God, you won't go anywhere. It's impossible. It takes that kind of fiery willpower, fiery determination. This is power in its best sense, willpower, willingness, commitment, with that energy behind it. You know, I said in the service, I can't remember what it was about, forgive me, but last Sunday, I remember saying, this is why Swami Kriyananda calls one of the chapters in the Raja Yoga book, life is a battlefield. We are at war. We have to absolutely be able to acknowledge that. We're at war because the ego and Satan, who's a part of the infinite consciousness that's just aligned itself with our lower chakras, with our negative qualities, they have their own magnetism, just their energy too. So if we're not willing to really fight and say, I am on my way to remembering who I am, with that kind of determination, we're going to lose the battle. And that's what Krishna said to Arjuna. He said, you fight or everybody's going to lose you. Everybody. We need you to be the representative for how to do this spiritual battle. That's your role. And look at the element is fire. And when you think of it, fire transforms everything. Nothing goes into a fire and comes out looking the same. So the third chakra is very important because it's we make our way through that chakra and it takes a lot of effort. But when we do, major transformation has happened. When we can commit ourselves to do it, that which is extremely difficult but we know beyond a doubt to be right and to stick to it, we have won a battle and transformation begins to happen in our life. And that's when everybody starts noticing you're changing. Everybody, what's happening with you, they say. What's going on? In a weird way, they can't figure it out. I told you last week, did you change your hair? Did you always wear glasses? Because your whole energy's different. They're reading your aura and they don't know it. But it is what happens. It's a very important time, this fire element. Okay? Remember, when it's out of line, it's that same kind of willpower, same kind of control, misdirected. This is the really grossly abusive partner. This is the boss that is virtually impossible, because no matter what you do, you can't get it right, because the little needle you have to fit yourself through is impossibly small. Just who they are. They're tyrants. It makes tyrants out of people. Literally. I mean, I just looked down and saw the word cruelty, abuse, bigotry, dogmatism. That's it in the wrong direction. But in the right direction, it's Arjuna. It's winning the battle. It's actually being able. That comes very early on in the Bhagavad Gita. And it goes for 18 chapters. So Arjuna lives, he fights the war, he makes it. Very good for us. And he moves on. Okay? Fourth chakra is the heart chakra. It's Anahata, it's called. The heart. The very big issue here is this. The heart is a very, very meaningful place on our spiritual path. You can hear every chakra is, obviously. But at the heart, several things happen. Most of us are very emotional. We can know it or not, but we live with a huge number of likes and dislikes. Basically, they define us. And most of us are not happy when we're not getting what we like. And we're very unhappy if we have to live in situations that we dislike. And really, most of the time, we're unaware of how emotional that makes us, how angry it makes us, how competitive it makes us, how petulant it makes us, how hurtful it can make us. And we find ways to justify it. This person was so awful to me. They deserve my anger. And I'm going to tell them just how awful they are. And I'm in the right, because they have been terrible to me. And we go, and maybe they've been terrible to you. I mean, there are a lot of people who behave very badly. But you are being emotional. You're out of control. You're being very reactive. It's very different than the other quality in the heart, which is devotion. And devotion is taking all of that same energy. Remember last week, energy can neither be created nor destroyed, but it can always be transformed. First law of thermodynamics, physical law of the universe. You can't create it or destroy it, but you can always transform it. You can take water and make electricity. You can take water and make it into ice. You can take anger and turn it into love. This is absolutely doable. There's that beautiful, beautiful story called Left to Tell, is the name of the book, of the woman who lived through the Rwandan Holocaust in the 1990s by hiding in the bathroom of a minister. The story is way too long to tell, but she was of a family that had a very high stature. Her father, I think, was the, if he wasn't the mayor of the town in Rwanda, he was the person everybody came to. To solve their problems, for guidance. So when there was this battle between the Tutsis and Hutus, she was on the wrong side of that. And it was a brutal hand-to-hand, literally chopping people up, brutal Holocaust. And I don't remember how many people lost their lives, but it was in the millions. I mean, it's terrible. It was horrible what went on. And she hid in a bathroom with eight other women, closed in with very little air, very little food for 4 months. Only one person could sit down at a time. Nobody could lie down. And she started praying and praying and praying. And Jesus appeared to her. She was her whole family was a good Catholic. And I'm telling you, if you read this book, very hard book to read, but one of the most inspiring books I've ever read. She's listening to them murder her whole family, her favorite brother, her cousin, just outside. Let's chop open his brains and see how smart he is. Whack. Terrible, terrible stuff that went on. She starts praying. She prays and prays and prays for days at a time without sleeping. And Jesus comes to her, literally appears to her. And at some point, she said to him, how can I not, how are you letting this happen? How can you support these people? How can you love them? And Jesus looked at her and he said to her, these are all my children. And that woman, she got freed and she left. But she, with that experience with Jesus who kept coming back to her, and who she was as a, who that soul was, her heart started opening and opening. And she came back not that many years later and found the very people who had murdered her whole family to them, forgave them, and told them that she loved them. And, you know, she still works for the United Nations. It's quite a story. That is the transformation of emotion to devotion. Seeing God in everyone and everything and loving them. And those words, I know, sound, I mean, I hear myself say them. But you know, I had an experience like this with my partner slash husband. We never got married, but we've been together so long, he's my husband. About 18 years ago now, where I had an experience with Master. He said to me, you two are going to be together as long as you're both alive. What are you going to do about that? How are you going to make it good? He came to me. He said this to me. And I looked at Barry, and it came right to me. Every time you look at him, every time, you see nothing but God looking back at you, because it's the truth. We're all manifestations of that divine energy. The truth is, we are each and every one of us God. We forget that, though. We like this person, we don't like that person, this person annoys me, they have this quality, my husband's driving me crazy. I said to myself, you will never see anything wrong with him again. You will hold him in love. He is God. He's come to you to teach you lessons, to show you the way. And I've said it many times, I can't say it's 100%, but it's been close. I have learned unconditional love, and it's beautiful. And it's a big deal. And if you know how hard it is with the people who are closest to you in the world, it's easy to love strangers. It really is. You try it with your parents or your children or your siblings or your husband or your wife or your partner. Very hard. They know exactly how to get to every button. You know? You think it's going to be easy at the beginning. It gets harder and harder until one day you say, enough. This is silly. I said to them one day, I'm never fighting with you again, sweetheart. We are fighting about the same exact things now that we fought about 20 years ago, the same things. I know from the first word how the fight's going to go. I know the script. Anybody in this room could say it's the truth. Why would I do that? I'm here to love you. If you want to fight, fight with yourself. Of course, you can't fight with yourself. It's like one hand clapping. You can't do it. So our whole lives change because they blessed me with that. But it's not about me. It's not like I did anything great. It's that the truth was spoken. By God's grace, I heard it. And I want to tell you, it's the only way I've been able to exist as manager of this church, as a spiritual director of Ananda Palo Alto. Because you think every person that comes here, how do you think they all feel about me? They say she could be such a pain in the rear end. And I can be. And I say to them, let's each try and see the divine in each other. That's what we're here to do. That's why we're together. We're making progress on the spiritual path. We're realizing the truth. We're moving from devotion into the heart, from emotion to the heart's devotion. That's why. Why do the Indians do this? I bow to the divine in you. That's what this means. It's beautiful. And why they don't shake hands and hug each other as much as we do now, everything's changing. In India, unfortunately, the West has had its influence. But they knew they were exchanging energy. You didn't know what you would get with the hug. But when you bow to the divine in each other, you know exactly what you're going to get. That's what we're supposed to be doing at the fourth chakra. Okay? Emotions don't get us anywhere. I said to a man who came to talk to me yesterday, he went on and on for 15 minutes. I love this man. I said to him, sweetie, you're going to get very mad at me and you might run screaming from my room. And you may feel you never want to talk to me again. But I love you enough, I'm going to take the risk. You've been sitting here, and all I've been hearing you talking about is what's wrong with him, what's wrong with him, what's wrong with him. You can't change him. There's nothing you can do. You can pray for him. You could learn to love him. That would change him. What about you? What are we going to do in here to make a difference in the world? I promise you, my marriage is much better now than it was headed to be. It starts out like this. It just goes like this, further and further. At the first thought of that, seeing something wrong, judging somebody, why are they wearing those clothes? Why is she eating that Sunday when she's already overweight? Why? How many thoughts go through our minds like that? Thousands. We're actually wired neurologically to have five times as many negative thoughts as positive. And if we have a positive and negative experience, the negative experience stays with us five times longer. Isn't that amazing? We're wired that way. I've had a few words with God about this. This is not fair. But it's true. We have to overcome that. That's not easy. Everything is pulling us. We feel so self-righteous. It's wrong. It doesn't help. Catch yourself the first minute, whether it's your partner, your boss, your employee, a stranger walking down the road, you don't like the way they walk. Look how many judgmental thoughts go through your mind. Okay, I'm going to stop at 4, where we have moved from fire to air, which is still can be measured, still can be compressed, but much more expansive. Can you see how we're taking the journey back to our expansive, all-pervading? I'm going to ask Bhajana to quickly cover. Bhajana, you think I don't do anything quickly. Bhajana doesn't do anything quickly. It'll probably take all of next week, but it's okay. She's a beautiful speaker and a beautiful soul. But I'm going to ask her to do 5 and 6. They're important. They're really the end of the journey. So we have to get there, but I don't want to keep you guys any later. But before we stop tonight, any last... Again, each week I'm giving you a lot of information. Any questions or comments? Yes. And this is a very interesting issue because as a rule, you don't want to focus on the lower chakras. You want to be focusing up here because, as I was telling you, you want to draw energy up. So really, purple and blue are very high colors and ultimately white. But sometimes we need to use color to balance a little. So we can use colors in those ways. But again, you have to be thoughtful and mindful. It's easier to say to somebody, wear a lot of blue, or even green, which is the color of the heart, than I would not be inclined to say most of the time. But look, the color of brahmacharya is yellow. Again, it's one of the yamas, non-sensuality of brahmacharya. So it's like, don't be, but brahmacharis around the world are wearing yellow. So it's not a black and white thing. You know, I don't know why that's the case. I'm sorry about that. If these colors are not accurate, this is not the same chart that I had last week, but I forgot to bring it over, so I just grabbed what's back there. It should be yellow, orange, red. These are the primary colors. Now, there is more than one color that's associated with each chakra, so the outer edges of chakras energetically can be different colors. But as a rule, yellow, orange, red, green, blue, purple, white. That's how we think of it usually. White. That's why I let my hair go white. I'm heading there, guys. Everybody keeps telling me we can all make it this lifetime. I don't want to waste any more energy or life. The videos will be, yeah. The videos and the audio will be up tomorrow. Yeah, the man comes on. The Bill who helps us, he'll have this talk up tomorrow. You know, we've created a Dropbox link for all of you now. After every, you don't even have to go to Ananda.org. You all got an email. You should have. And if you just click on that link, like by tomorrow evening, you can listen to this talk again. We'll put the videos up somewhere. But so you got an email today. We set it up today. I decided we do it for our Kriya prep classes, so I said let's do it for the chakra class. So each one of you can have access. So if you happen to have to miss a class, you could listen to it, or if you want to listen again. This is a lot of information, but it's good information. So we're packing a lot in, and again, I want to say, listen to the talks again if you can, but more importantly, even for some of you who have taken Raja Yoga, I promise you, every time you take it, you will learn more. But definitely consider taking the Raja Yoga class. It's extraordinary. There's not much like it around. And can we turn this off for a moment?